Picture this, all right? You invite a massive group of friends out to like a really fancy Michelin star restaurant.
Nice.
Right? You order the tasting menu. You get the absolute most expensive wine, all the bells and whistles. The meal is incredible.
Natural.
Yeah, everyone is thrilled. But then the server drops the check on the table and you reach into your pocket and you realize you completely forgot your wallet.
Oh no, the worst feeling.
It is. You look around the table, panic setting in, because there is just absolutely no way to pay for this giant feast.
Right.
And that feeling, that incredibly awkward slow motion disaster, that is exactly what is happening right now in the halls of Congress with this wildly popular piece of federal AI legislation.
It really is the perfect analogy for it.
Thanks. So we're looking at a stack of sources today, and they're all centered around this highly unusual edition of a newsletter covering the AI beat, issue number 67, to be exact.
Yeah, and it outlines this massive collision course.
Exactly. We've got a universally loved AI safety bill, a critically strained mental health hotline, and the looming Wall Street debuts of giant AI companies all crashing together.
And, you know, what's fascinating here is that this particular newsletter, it doesn't just report on the problem.
Right. The author actually did something crazy.
Yeah, they actually published a drafted federal bill to fix it. It's called the 988 SAFE Act. You rarely see that kind of thing.
Almost never. Yeah. So our mission for this deep dive today is to unpack how a simple 3% fee proposed in this draft might be the only linchpin holding this entire chaotic landscape together.
It's quite the mission.
It is. Mm-hmm. But to understand the fix, we first got to understand the feast we ordered without a wallet. So let's talk about the GUNARD Act.
Right. Senate Bill 3062.
Yes, the GUNARD Act. This is a piece of legislation introduced back in October 2025, and it passed the Senate Judiciary Committee on April 30th, 2026, by a vote of 22-0.
Which is just wild.
I literally had to read that twice. You do not see 22-0 votes in Washington anymore.
No, not unless you are, like, renaming a post office.
Exactly. It is universally popular.
Well, it's popular because it targets something politically bulletproof, right? Protecting kids online.
Oh, for sure.
The GUNARD Act mandates strict age verification across the entire chatbot industry. It forces these companies to keep minors off certain dangerous companion products.
And it requires them to boldly disclose that the voice the user is talking to is actually a machine, right? Not a licensed human therapist.
Right. And it carries massive civil penalties for violations. Mm. We're talking $100,000 per incident.
$100,000, wow.
Per violation. It's huge.
So, I mean, it sounds fantastic on paper, but here is the glaring flaw. Here is the forgotten wallet.
Yep.
The bill tells the industry to build all these complex safety architectures,
yeah,
but it provides absolutely zero funding to enforce any of these mandates at the federal level.
$0.
So why is that such a fatal flaw? Like, if it's a law, can't the government just tell companies to do it and then fine them if they don't?
Well, that brings us to a really obscure but incredibly powerful procedural trap.
Okay.
There is a statute from 1995 called the Unfunded Mandates Reform Act. Let's think of it as an emergency brake on Congress.
An emergency brake. I like that.
Yeah. It was designed specifically to stop lawmakers from passing massive expensive regulations and just forcing the private sector or individual states to foot the bill without an economic analysis.
Oh, so they can't just pass the buck.
Exactly. If a bill imposes costs on the private sector that exceed a specific threshold, which for this fiscal year is roughly $218
million. $218
million,
got it.
Right. If it crosses that, that emergency brake becomes active.
And obviously, forcing the entire generative AI industry to completely overhaul their safety systems, build robust age verification, monitor all this compliance, that is going to cost way more than $218 million.
Oh, far more. Not even close.
Yeah.
And because the GUNARD Act currently has no funding source identified to offset this, the 1995 law arms any single senator with a procedural weapon.
Any single senator.
Any single one. When this bill hits the Senate floor, literally one person can stand up, raise a point of order, and say, stop, we cannot afford this mandate.
Wow.
And that single objection halts the bill entirely.
Just one person can do that.
Yeah. Suddenly, to bypass that objection and save the bill, you don't just need a simple majority anymore. You need 60 votes.
So a bill that passed committee unanimously could die a quiet procedural death on the floor simply because of a math problem.
Basically, yeah. And there is a ticking clock here, too.
Right. The Congressional Budget Office is reviewing this right now.
A very loud ticking clock.
Yeah.
The Congressional Budget Office, or the CBO, is basically the accountant for Congress.
Right.
They are expected to release their official cost estimate for the GUARD Act really soon. We're talking sometime between mid-June and mid-July.
So, like, any day now.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the second that official number lands and officially approves the mandate, clears that $218 million threshold.
A trap is sprung.
Yes. The threat of a single senator stalling the bill becomes a tangible reality.
Which brings us to this incredibly unique source material we have today. If the JARD Act is procedurally doomed because it has no wallet, the 988 SAFE Act discussion draft is stepping up to pay the tab.
Precisely. It's version 3.41 of the discussion draft, by the way.
Right. Okay, let's unpack this mechanics-wise, because it proposes a 3% user fee on the United States consumer revenue of covered chatbot products.
Yep, 3%.
And this money goes into a dedicated treasury trust fund. But wait, let me push back for a second here.
Sure.
If I am like a college student, right, and I'm building a cool little conversational AI app in my dorm room, do I suddenly owe the federal government 3% of the $20 I made this month?
No. And that is a crucial distinction. The draft anticipates exactly that scenario.
Oh, it does.
Yeah. The 988 SAFE Act has very specific built-in exemptions. Products that generate under $5 million in annual revenue pay absolutely nothing.
Okay, phew.
Right. It is meticulously designed to target the massive scale-level deployments that are actually generating systemic risk, you know, not the dorm room developers.
That makes a lot of sense. But what about the company selling the underlying technology? Like, if I build an AI model and sell access to it to another business, am I paying the fee on that?
No, and that's another key carve-out. It exempts business-to-business API licensing.
Okay, API.
Right, API stands for Application Programming Interface. Think of it as the plumbing that lets two software programs talk to each other.
Got it. The plumbing.
Exactly. If a company is just selling the plumbing to another business, they aren't hit with the fee. The fee heavily targets consumer-facing revenue.
Okay, so it's a very targeted approach.
Very. And furthermore, it avoids raising broad taxes. The fee acts much more like the 911 charge in your monthly phone bill, or how device makers fund the FDA.
Oh, right, those little surcharges.
Exactly. It's a fee on the service to maintain the safety net beneath it. And to prevent it from becoming a forever fee, the bill includes a strict 10-year sunset clause.
Wait, really? It just
ends. It literally ceases to exist in a decade unless Congress actively votes to renew it.
Wow. Okay. So we collect this 3% fee from the tech giants and we put it into a treasury trust fund.
Right.
But where exactly is that money going? Because this is why I really want to look at the human element. The data our sources highlight here is just, it's staggering.
It really is.
We are talking about an entirely invisible crisis.
The scale of it is almost hard to comprehend. To give you a concrete idea, let's look at some disclosures OpenAI made back in October 2025.
Okay.
By their own internal metrics, roughly 1.2 million of their users a week.
A week.
1.2 million users a week show explicit signs of possible suicidal planning or intent in their conversations with the chatbot.
If you are listening to this right now, just let that number sink in for a second. Over a million people every 7 days typing out explicit indicators of severe psychological distress to a machine.
It's chilling.
It is. And what happens currently? Like, what is the industry's quote-unquote best practice when a chatbot detects that a user is in danger?
Currently, the chatbot just displays a phone number on the screen. Mm-hmm. It shows them 988, the Suicide and Crisis Lifeline.
It just drops a phone number in the chat.
Yep.
That feels like watching someone drowning, tossing a life preserver into the water 20 feet away and just walking off. Like, you're just hoping they have the energy to swim to it.
That's exactly what it is. It's a completely passive handoff. And worse, it's pointing them to a system that is already buckling under its own weight.
Right, the 988 system itself.
Yeah. A recent study published in May 2026 by JAMO Network Open, they surveyed the actual crisis centers answering that 988 number.
And what did they find?
71% of those centers report being fundamentally understaffed.
21%.
Yes. And almost 90% report severe difficulty acquiring the funds just to hire people. The 988 network handled over 8 million contacts in 2025 alone.
8 million. And yet, if you look at the federal level, funding for the Lifeline is completely flat.
Yep.
The budget request for fiscal year 2027 is hovering right around $534.6 million. There is not a dollar of increase to account for this massive influx of AI referred traffic.
Which highlights a profound structural inequity here. In 13 different jurisdictions across the country, standard phone lines pay a monthly fee, usually anywhere from 8 to 60 cents a month, to fund the 988 system.
So normal phone users are paying to maintain the safety net.
Exactly. But the AI products, which are identifying over 1 million at-risk users a week and pointing them at that exact same net, they currently contribute nothing.
Nothing. So the 988 Safety Act is basically saying, hey, you're flooding the system. You need to help pay for the system.
Right.
But it doesn't just fund the centers, does it? It also mandates a mechanical change in how the technology actually works.
Yes, and this is crucial. It calls for a warm handoff.
Walk us through what that actually means.
So a warm handoff means the technology actively bridges the gap. Instead of just passively showing a phone number and hoping a person in crisis dials it, the AI companies would be mandated to build a live, consented transfer directly to a human counselor.
Okay.
And the draft specifically dictates that this transfer has to happen in under 5 minutes.
So the user says something deeply concerning, the AI flags it, asks the user if they want help, and if they say yes, the chat interface seamlessly connects them to a live human professional on the other end, all in under 5 minutes.
Exactly. The trust fund, fed by that 3% fee, staffs the 988 centers so they actually have the capacity to receive these live transfers.
Oh, I see.
And it also funds the enforcement of the Guard Act protections we talked about earlier. It solves the forgotten wallet problem.
I hear you, but let me play devil's advocate for a second.
Go for it.
If I am an executive at a massive tech giant, I am screaming about this. Why on earth would these AI companies voluntarily agree to hand over 3% of their consumer revenue? That is a massive hit to the bottom line. Tech giants usually fight these kinds of fees to the bitter end.
Well, if we only look at the technology, it doesn't make sense. But if we connect this to the bigger picture, to Wall Street, the calculus changes entirely.
Okay. Let's follow the money.
Always. Our sources bring in recent S-1 filings submitted to the SEC. An S-1 is a foundational document a company files when it is preparing to go public and sell stock.
Right, the IPO paperwork?
Exactly. Anthropic filed a confidential draft on June 1st, and OpenAI followed on June 8th. And get this, OpenAI is sitting on an $852 billion valuation, eyeing $1 trillion listing.
$1 trillion.
Yeah.
The second you go public, your entire operational philosophy shifts. When you are a private company, your founders can decide to prioritize a safety mission, even if it costs them some money. But a public company, you answer to institutional shareholders every 90 days.
Exactly. For these AI chatbots, engagement equals revenue. The longer you talk to the bot, the more valuable you are.
And safety features, by their very nature, reduce engagement.
Precisely. If a session ends because a user is handed off to a crisis line, that session is over. If a minor is locked out of a companion product because of age verification, that is a user who is no longer contributing to quarterly growth metrics.
Wow, that's a grim incentive structure.
It gets worse. The Center for Democracy and Technology already identified 37 manipulative design patterns currently active in chatbots.
37? Like what?
Things like simulating empathy to cultivate emotional dependency and keep users talking longer. Once these companies go public, those design patterns aren't just quirks. They have a very specific quarterly financial value attached to them.
So the investors want maximum engagement. But maximum engagement without safety guardrails inevitably leads to massive public harm. And massive public harm leads to massive lawsuits.
Bingo. We are already seeing the tip of the spear on this. There are coordinated dockets of chatbot harm cases in San Francisco right now, and there's a big lawsuit in Florida, too.
Which is why the 988 Safe Act offers the ultimate carrot to the AI industry, right?
Yes. It is a provision in the draft called the Safe Harbor, Section 206D, to be exact.
Safe Harbor. Those are the magic words for any corporate lawyer. How does the shield work in this context?
The draft explicitly states that if these companies pay the 3% fee and they successfully build that warm handoff to the exact federal standard, they are granted a statutory shield.
Meaning they can't be sued?
Basically. They are legally protected from liability for what happens after that transfer to the 908 counselor is completed, assuming there was no gross negligence on their end.
Oh, wow. Let's view this from the perspective of an underwriter or, like, an investment banker managing a $1 trillion IPO. They despise uncertainty.
Hey.
Open-ended negligence lawsuits or wrongful death claims. You cannot accurately price that risk into a stock offering. It is a bottomless liability tail. But a 3% fee. That is a fixed known number. You can put that in a spreadsheet.
Precisely. You can disclose a fixed fee in the risk factor section of an S-1 filing. You cannot bound an open-ended, multi-state legal docket.
Right.
The 1988 SAFE Act is offering these companies the one thing Wall Street cannot manufacture on its own: insurable certainty regarding what a product legally owes the user. It inevitably loses to a mental health crisis.
It's like buying an insurance policy for your IPO.
Yeah.
You pay the fee, you build the handoff, and you cap your liability.
Exactly.
Meanwhile, as Washington sits around waiting for a CBO budget score, the states are absolutely not waiting. The private sector isn't waiting either. There is major motion happening outside the federal gridlock.
Oh, definitely.
Let's talk about New York. The state legislature in Albany recently passed a bill, S-9051, and they didn't just pass it. It was completely unanimous on June 5th.
Yeah, unanimous. It is arguably the broadest state-level ban on companion chatbots for minors we have seen so far.
But the mechanism of how it works is critical, right?
Very. It is a feature-level ban. It doesn't outlaw an entire app. It makes it illegal to serve minors specific unsafe features.
Features like human simulation or holding on to a user's personal memory for more than 12 hours. Why is that memory piece so dangerous for a minor?
Because holding long-term memory allows the system to cultivate a deep, artificial emotional dependency.
I see.
If the bot remembers your fears, your daily routines, and your secrets over months, it begins to act as an unsupervised emotional crutch.
That's terrifying for a kid.
It is. New York is saying that if a company serves those specific features to a minor, the attorney general can hit them with $25,000 penalties per violation. And this takes effect January 1st, 2027.
And you combine that with statutes already on the books in places like Nevada, which bars public schools from using AI to perform the duties of a school counselor, or Illinois, which outright bans offering AI therapy.
The legal walls are closing in rapidly on chatbots that act as rogue therapists.
Which perfectly explains the massive shift we are seeing within the industry itself. Look at that recent acquisition in the telehealth space, Timely Care.
Right, Timely Care. On May 4th, they acquired a company called Alongside.
And Timely Care is a massive provider of virtual health services for college campuses, right?
Yes. And Alongside builds a chatbot named Kiwi, which is designed by clinicians and used in hundreds of K-12 schools.
Kiwi is a fascinating case study. It was designed with a specific hard-coded ceiling. It is purely routine, low-acuity skill building. It is explicitly not standalone therapy.
Exactly.
It has safety models running constantly, monitoring the conversation for any signs of self-harm. The millisecond that risk surfaces, the chatbot immediately stops being a companion and escalates the situation to a network of licensed human clinicians.
And that escalation architecture isn't just good clinical practice. It is a vital legal survival tactic.
A survival tactic. I like how you phrase that.
Well, it is. By positioning the chatbot merely as an early intervention tool, potentially an intake funnel that sits in front of a licensed human continuum of care, they are answering the legal question before regulators even ask it.
They're saying to states like Illinois and Nevada, we aren't replacing the therapist, we are just the sorting hat for the therapist.
Precisely. The AI handles the ordinary days, and the licensed human takes the dangerous ones.
Wow.
Escalating a dangerous conversation to a licensed human is currently the ultimate compliance argument in every single state. It's the only legally defensible position right now.
So let's bring this all together. If you're listening to this and wondering why your tax dollars aren't already fixing this, it's because the machinery of government is just incredibly complex.
So complex.
We started with the GUARD Act, a wildly popular federal mandate to protect kids that is essentially stalled because no one remembered to bring their wallet to pay for the enforcement, all thanks to the 1995 Unfunded Mandates Reform Act.
Right.
Then we looked at a creative, entirely new funding solution, the 1988 SAFE Act, which proposes a 3% user fee to build a treasury trust fund, exempting the under $5 million startups to focus on the giants.
And we connected that to the urgent reality on the ground. The 988 crisis centers are buckling under millions of contacts a year, profoundly understaffed, while generative AI models are silently identifying over a million suicidal users a week and merely offering them a passive phone number.
Exactly. And we saw how the looming pressure cooker of trillion-dollar Wall Street S-1 filings might actually force the industry to the negotiating table. They desperately need the Section 206D liability safe harbor that the 988 SAFE Act offers, because open-ended lawsuits are toxic to investors.
Yep.
And finally, we saw how states like New York and private companies like Timely Care are already drawing the boundaries and forcing these human escalation pathways, because the alternative is legal suicide.
You know, all of this raises a massive underlying question, though.
Well, what's that?
The entire premise of the 988 SAFE Act and the way these companies are designing their compliance protocols relies on this concept of the warm handoff.
Right. Moving a user in crisis from a machine to a live, licensed human in under 5 minutes.
Yes. The assumption is that the human is the ultimate gold standard of care. But let's look at the trajectory here. These AI models are getting exponentially more advanced and significantly cheaper to run by the month.
That's true.
Meanwhile, the human safety net, the 988 system, school counselors, is facing worsening systemic staffing shortages. They're fundamentally underfunded and burning out.
Yeah.
So the provocative thought I want to leave you with is this. As the models improve and the human system strains even further, how long is it going to be until the tech companies look at the data and start arguing to regulators that their algorithms are actually better, faster, and more reliable at crisis management than the underfunded humans we are so desperately trying to hand these users off to?
Wow. That is a chilling thought. If the human safety net is too afraid to catch the people the AI is dropping, the AI companies might just try to become the safety net themselves, cutting the humans out entirely.
Exactly.
It is a powerful reminder that we have to keep questioning the infrastructure behind the technology we interact with every single day. Because right now, society has ordered a massive, incredibly complex technological feast.
We really have.
The AI is advancing, the chatbots are deploying, the crises are happening in real time, the meal has been eaten. The only question left is, who is going to be stuck with the check when they realize the wallet is missing? Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning, keep exploring, and we will catch you next time.